You're listening to Catch the Current, the coolest seafood podcast out there from the team at Undercurrent News, your trusted source for seafood prices, news, and data. I'm Amanda Buckle.
And I'm Lauren Castiglione. And Amanda, it is tariff o'clock again.
In between using his Truth social platform to post about Elon Musk and the Jeffrey Epstein files and accusing former President Barack Obama of treason, President Trump has also been sharing updates on his progress with the Liberation Day tariffs. Needless to say, it's a lot to sort through.
And the tariff updates are coming from Trump at all hours. But with our global team, Undercurrent News pretty much has a reporter on at all times to cover the breaking news regarding tariffs.
It's true. While some of the U.S. team was preparing for bed Tuesday, I'm like putting the kids to bed and I'm like getting alerts from Masa. He's like, Trump just announced Japan. I'm
like, go.
Close your eyes. So Trump took to Truth Social to share what he called a massive deal with Japan. The deal, he said, was perhaps the largest deal ever made.
Part of that deal, according to Trump's post on Truth Social, involves Japan paying reciprocal tariffs to the U.S. of 15%. Trump also said Japan has agreed to open its markets to U.S. agriculture products, including rice, and to ease restrictions on its auto sector. Japan exported approximately 20,000 metric tons of seafood to the U.S. in 2024 under Harmonized System Code 03, with a total value of $370 million. The 15% rate on Japanese goods is the most favorable among all recent deals struck by the U.S., standing out in comparison to revisions with other key trading partners. Joining us now to dive a little bit deeper is Undercurrent News editorial director Cliff White and America's editor Jason Huffman.
So Cliff, when we had you on last week, we were talking about how Indonesia scored a big win with the Trump administration, reducing its tariff rate from 32% to 19%. But then this week, more deals were announced. Japan was bracing for a planned 25% tariff, but now is only set to face 15%.
All these tariffs are not wins for for traders. Like 0% is a win. But if you're talking about what these countries faced under the alternative Trump proposal, which was much higher tariffs for a lot of these countries, it's better. So yeah, Japan now faces a 15% tariff for all its seafood and other goods it sends to the US. And that is down from the potential 25% tariff it faced, but it's still going to make Japanese seafood more expensive in the US. So you've got obviously a lot of high-end sushi stuff that's sent from Japan, tuna, yellowtail, other specialty sushi items. That's a big trade. Japanese scallops, usually not processed in Japan, but increasingly so after Japan's rift with China. So scallops could potentially face some kind of a hit, especially Trump is targeting countries like Vietnam and the Philippines, which we'll talk later, with a higher tariffs for transshipped goods. So stuff that's sent from Japan to Vietnam to get processed, for example, may face a much higher tariff. So again, this is all shaking out over these next 2 weeks with August 1st as the deadline for when higher tariff rates go into effect for pretty much every country that doesn't have a deal with the US. So we won't know the ultimate impact of this immediately as each individual deal is signed. But looking at Japan-US trade, it's at least $370 million worth of seafood that got sent from Japan to the US directly in 2024, probably higher because that doesn't include every harmonized tariff code. So yeah, it's not insignificant, but again, it's going to make things more expensive in the US.
Yeah, so Cliff had mentioned scallops. That's one of the areas that I cover, Japanese scallops. And we're already seeing upwards pressure on that market because the size mix is trending smaller. And so prices are increasing because of supply constraints. And any added tariff on top of that will only fuel that upwards momentum. So Japan wasn't the only country to make a deal with Trump this week. The president also announced a deal with the Philippines. The country had its original 20% rate reduced to 19%, not nearly as big of a deal like with Indonesia or Japan.
Yeah, so the Philippines deal also affects seafood. The Philippines sends a lot of tuna, swimming crab to the U.S. It was one of the top 10 largest sources of tuna to the U.S., sending $46 million worth of tuna in 2024. Philippines isn't like a seafood superpower, but it certainly sends a lot of seafood to the US. The big thing to note about this deal is it sets a benchmark for all these Southeast Asian countries that are now negotiating with the US on trade deals. Vietnam already has their rate locked in. Thailand is negotiating right now. India, that's South Asia, but they're negotiating. And everyone wants a deal that's better than their neighbors. Even though they're in the ASEAN bloc, the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, they're all competing with similar products to get into the US market. And one thing that they're all trying to figure out, each of these individual countries, is how much of their own market are they willing to sacrifice? Because this isn't a one-way street of goods going to the US. There's also US goods coming into each of these countries. And you see the Philippines and Japan opening up their markets in ways that we really haven't seen in recent history. A lot of these countries are very protectionist of their home markets. Thailand is taking a different tack. They're refusing. And Japan was very protectionist of its auto industry, the EU as well. So we're really seeing an impact from these tariffs in US exports potentially getting more leverage in Asia and around the world because of these trade deals. So that's something to look at as well. US seafood exports are not insignificant. The US catches a whole lot of seafood and farms a little bit too. That's going to Asia, a lot of it. And you've got lobster, you've got other high-end stuff, a little niche, but like gooey duck, that's going to Asia. And US exporters are going to have a much easier time getting stuff into Asian countries, is the hope of the Trump administration, I think, with these deals.
You know, at Undercurrent, we've got the data. And this week, America's editor Jason Huffman worked alongside UCN's price analysts to find that Trump's trade war with the rest of the world is contributing to price inflation in at least four of five major categories of the US seafood wholesale market.
Of course, the situation is complicated, but that's why we've recruited Jason and my fellow Undercurrent News price analysts, Gary Morrison and Ben Fisher, to break it all down nice and easy for us.
Yes, Lauren, and where would we be without these guys? So about 2 or 3 weeks ago, I don't know because I've lost track of time amidst all of this tariff business, I updated our tally of what U.S. seafood importers were spending on tariffs since Trump's Liberation Day announcement on April 2nd. And I learned that in May, the last month for which NOAA has data, the tariff amounts doubled. And combined for those 2 months, I discovered the U.S. has spent more than $244 million on tariffs for some $4.9 billion worth of seafood. That's just the 10% generalized number and the extra big tariffs placed on China. We know that bigger tariffs are coming as we get the nation's specific numbers. So I started to think about how much are these tariffs contributing to the inflation of seafood prices? If only we had some way of calculating that. Eureka! Undercurrent now maintains a database with more than 500 seafood wholesale prices, and also includes a group of reporters who specialize in gathering that information, people like Lauren, Gary, and Ben. So I asked them, because the best way to do a job is to have other people do it. I asked them to look at their categories and tell me what they were seeing. And stunner, prices were up for most of the seafood items, except for one really notable exception. It's the category that paid the most in tariffs during the 2 month period, Atlantic salmon. They paid $55 million, 7% of the overall $848.8 million in import value. So I got to shoot it back to Lauren on this. Lauren, why is Atlantic salmon not getting more expensive in the US?
So the first thing that we have to understand is that salmon is a highly seasonal market here in the US, and tariffs landed right in the middle of peak shipments for Mother's Day and early summer promotions when demand begins to temper down here in the US. It raised costs for sure, but it didn't stop the market from correcting like it normally does this time of year. On the frozen side, we saw more price stability than versus fresh. The big difference is that frozen salmon reacts a little bit differently to tariff costs. It's traded slower. Buyers have more time to evaluate margins. So where we see tariff pressure, it shows up more clearly on the frozen side compared to the fresh side. We saw that on both Chilean and Norwegian origins. When looking at Canadian products, which was tariff-free, there was more stability here, but it's a much smaller volume player. Pricing is typically traded at a premium compared to Chile and Norway. So there wasn't a massive shift in demand to Canadian product once the tariffs were implemented, and Canada remained unaffected.
Seems kind of surprising because I presume that Canadian salmon would have this incredible advantage. and would be jumping into the US market in larger numbers. And I guess we're not seeing that yet.
Right. That's what we were all kind of speculating what could happen at the start of the tariffs. But the pure volumes coming out of Chile and Norway and the premiums that we're seeing on Canadian products, it just didn't level out that way, at least not yet.
Do you think, I mean, there's an added cost here. Eventually, someone's got to pay for it. Do you see maybe in the future tariffs tallying up and adding to the cost of Atlantic salmon?
Well, there's definitely tariffs included in the US wholesale prices that we are reporting on. So while the market has corrected down, that doesn't mean that the tariffs were not there. It could be that, in comparison to previous years, that downgrade going into the summer doldrums in the salmon market weren't as sharp as previous years because of that.
So the other big category for tariffs that I discovered was shrimp. Importers spent almost $20 million on tariffs for about $767 million worth of goods over that 2 month period. But here's where we saw a little bit of a difference. Prices seem to be going up. Gary, did the price increase relate in any way to the tariffs, or is that something else going on?
Yeah, so I think a lot of the increase is tariff related, right? So what we did see and what we talked about in a couple pods and a lot of our analysis leading into this period was that importers front-loaded shrimp imports pretty significantly, right? We were up about 19-20% through the first 5 months of the year. So supply and demand dynamics would dictate the more supply on the market and would certainly put some pressure on pricing. But that just wasn't the case for most categories. For the commodity type items like headless shell-on and head-on shell-on, those categories softened in the early part of the year. But as we approached the August 1, prices moved up a little bit to match some of the tariffs that we've seen. But what we're really seeing tariff impact are on origins and types of shrimp that importers can't shop, right? So if you're looking at black tiger shrimp, for example, freshwater shrimp and cooked. Asia is really the only source nations that importers can look for those types. And freshwater, specifically, are predominantly produced in Bangladesh, Thailand, and India. And those are some of those hardest hit countries that we've seen. So prices are up anywhere from, 15 to 18% since April 2nd. So that's, certainly tariff related, as importers know that replacement is going to be more expensive in the future for the specific niche item. So where importers cannot origin shop, they're certainly adding some tariff premiums. Now, it's not as sharp as some of the numbers that we're seeing, right? Indonesia 19%, Vietnam 20%, Bangladesh 35%, and Thailand 36%. There is some indication that, producers at the source are certainly absorbing some of those costs and that the importer is also absorbing some of it. So it's not a full pass-through to the consumer just yet. And a lot of that has to do with the supply and demand dynamics. The demand here in the US is certainly good, but not spectacular. We're in the summer right now, so it's typically a slower period for shrimp. The holidays are typically the highest demand period for shrimp. So there's some demand dynamics coming into play as well. And then we also know that there is demand destruction as prices rise. So even a smaller rise in prices, between 5 and 10% can eradicate demand 2 to 3% here in the US. So while tariffs play a role, supply and demand dynamics also come into play as well.
Man, I am just geeking out here because this is an excellent illustration of why, when you just have numbers by themselves, they don't tell the full picture unless you have the help of an analyst to kind of sort it out. Tariffs impact price, yes, but sometimes that's only one of the impacts that tariffs can have. As Gary was talking about shrimp and how the pressures are moving in different directions with different products as a result of the tariffs, that's like a really good example of how the numbers alone don't tell the story. Ben, you did some stuff on Chilean sea bass for us. I was looking at that chart and there's a spike around week 18 of the year. What are you seeing with tariffs in relation to Chilean sea bass?
So Chilean sea bass, or toothfish, is one of those interesting species where every serving that winds up on a plate in the United States is imported. And that's because there's no domestic fishery and the species is not farmed. The US's biggest trading partners for toothfish or Chilean sea bass are Korea, Australia, Chile, Argentina, and the Falkland Islands. And so, as a result, all Chilean sea bass in the US is subject to that global flat rate of 10% tariff. And so, when we look at our pricing data, we show that from the week before April 2nd, when the tariffs were announced, to now, Chilean sea bass prices have climbed anywhere between 8 to 14%, depending on product form. I think that tariffs hand in hand with incredible and unseasonably high demand for the species has helped in driving these prices higher. The spike that you talk about, Jason, Chilean sea bass is at an all-time high in terms of price, and customers are still buying. Although we're beginning to hear that more and more customers are pushing back at these current levels, but still, the fish is getting sold. And like we talked about, tariffs are paid across various parts of the supply chain, but I think it is telling that if you take the average of 8 and 14%, the amount that Chilean sea bass prices have increased, that's 11%, which is awfully close to 10.
I kept looking for 10% in the numbers I was looking at too, and they would never be exactly 10%. It would be a little bit less, a little bit more. So you got to figure there are other factors there, right?
Exactly.
So Jason's article, which includes all these really great insights from our team at Undercurrent News, we can find it in the show notes and then keep track on the page. We have our tariff blog just going nonstop. Thank you guys all for calling in and helping us break this all down. So Lauren, now that we got the rest of those guys out there, I want to talk to you about David.
Who is David?
Let me introduce you to him. It's the US-based protein bar brand that is now selling Alaska cod.
In the protein bar?
No. Okay. Let me clarify. So, David, it's inspired by the Michelangelo sculpture. They sell shelf-stable protein systems made of like milk protein isolate and collagen, whey protein concentrate, egg white, those type of things. So, it's bars. They have blueberry pie flavors, chocolate chip cookie dough, like a double fudge brownie. And no, Lauren, no, there is no cod flavor.
There's no chocolate and salted cod.
But yeah, there's no. I'd be interested in trying that, but no, that is not an option there. So their typical bars are 20 grams of protein and 150 calories. But the brand, I mean, they want to, promote themselves as not just about, a bar. They're about, protein in general. So they said that it's cod, boiled cod, is slightly more protein per calorie than a David bar, which is why they said we're committed to high protein, so we're selling it. So it's a new product on their website. It retails for $55. It's like a four pack of frozen filet products. And what's really cool too, David's new to the seafood world, but it was actually founded by the founder of protein bar brand RX Bar and the founder of the low carb dessert brand Raise. And they turned to a commercial fisherman and founder of the Alaskan salmon company, Kyle Lee, to source its Pacific cod. It's a Cordova, Alaska-based seafood company. They were founded in 2017 by Lee. And Lauren, you got to check out his Instagram and his TikTok. He's got this really great following, and he's wants to show people what it's like catching this fish. And he calls himself your own personal fisherman. So it's really cool to be able to see, like, they're promoting seafood and cod specifically as such a great protein. And then on top of it, I love what they're doing and who they partnered with to highlight where this fish is coming from. It's being pulled right out of the Alaska waters and sustainably sourced. It's a really different partnership and different product that I
Right.
wasn't expecting from this brand. So yeah, I encourage you to check
But
it out.
it's great that they're already targeting such a great audience for seafood, and it could be a natural,
I'm not somebody that personally goes to the gym, but there's people that go to the gym and then that follow that really strict healthy lifestyle, and there's brands around that like them. You ever see those ads for like the Eat Clean Bro?
Oh, yeah.
And they just sell like grilled chicken or something like that. And so to have this boiled cod, it's just really cool to see again like seafood being highlighted as a healthy protein.
As we all knew, but we must keep repeating ourselves.
Exactly. Like I said, I'm always, I'm always looking at it from, I guess, like from a mom perspective. Now from a health perspective too, seeing all these celebrities how they're eating more seafood to help with their beauty aspect and the collagen. But like I said, body, I'm not into bodybuilding, or,
But we could be.
but I could be. I could be. I like cod. All right. Well, that does it for us this week. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here next week.
Bye-bye.